Just got a free coffee with my EarnIFI points.
Your what?
The points I get with the new EarnIFI app from BP and Amoco. I got 250 for signing up and more every time I fill up or buy anything in the C-store.
Oh, can you use points for fuel?
Of course.
And discounts and deals?
On anything.
Oh, like chips?
Mm-hmm.
Sodas?
You got it.
The actual slushy machine.
Only what's actually for sale. But you do get double the points for the first 90 days. Just go to EarnIFIRewards.com to download the app.
Available at participating locations only. App content is subject to change.
Welcome back to the Paranormal Girl podcast. I am your host, Kristen. So we've already talked about types of ghosts that one might encounter. Today, we drill in on the kinds of hauntings that they would cause and what we might experience. We will begin with what defines a haunting. What does it mean to be haunted? Do all ghosts haunt or just some? I don't know. I guess we'll see. Just a brief aside. Here, I have been extremely ill all week, still getting over it. So if my voice sounds a little off today, that is what that is all about. All right. The words haunt, haunting, and haunted have different definitions that don't necessarily mean terribly different things at the core of the word. You, as a living, breathing person, can haunt a place, meaning you can frequent. A local pub can be your favorite go-to haunt. You can hear a haunting melody, see a haunting picture, have a memory that haunts you, meaning you have an experience with something that may have an unsettling impact on your emotions or have a lingering effect on you. And then haunting can describe the lingering, consistent presence of a paranormal entity or paranormal activity within a location or in the vicinity of a person. In regards to this last definition, it's obviously in the supernatural sense, a haunting in itself is not automatically bad. It's not a terrifying thing as we might expect or have come to expect. It's neither good or bad. It's just a state of things. Good or bad depends on the type of entity or ghost perpetrating the haunting and then the living's reaction to it. Believe it or not, there are people who claim to be experiencing a haunting who are like, meh, whatever. They have become unbothered by it. The haunting is neither here nor there and does not necessarily affect their lives in detrimental ways. To understand how that could be the case, let's revisit the concept of intelligent versus residual. Both types of ghostly occurrences can cause what we would call a haunting. So, with the residual, this is a non-interactive scene or sounds or event that is being repeated over time, playing on a loop. It never changes. It never tries to interact with the living. It does not affect the physical environment, ever. Because it's not actually a ghost, an entity, what have you. It is just a recording of the past in energetic form. Though it does not interact with our physical plane, that is not to say that you won't witness remnants of the time that it once did. And what I mean by that is sensing a change in temperature or hearing the sounds of physical interactions like footsteps, doors opening and closing, voices, etc. Residual hauntings seem to be imprinted on the space-time itself in most cases, evident with new buildings being built or renovations taking place, and evidence is captured of, say, what appears to be a person walking upstairs or through doors that no longer exist in the current day. Residual hauntings don't give two hecks, that there is a wall there. Now they're going to keep using the door or throughway that was imprinted along with them. A great example of this can be seen in the case of the Roman soldiers, seen by numerous people in the cellar of the treasurer's house of York. An 18-year-old heating apprentice named Harry Martindale stood balanced on his ladder in the cellar, chipping away at the vaulted ceiling in preparation for the new boiler installation. The year was 1953. As he worked, he heard something that oddly enough sounded like a trumpet or bugle blast. Thinking it had to be coming from someone's radio, he shook his head and continued his task. But then it happened again, this time sounding louder. And then he heard it again, this time seeming to come from just the other side of the cellar wall. Then, much to his terror and disbelief, a plumed helmet appeared coming through the wall. This was followed by the full emergence of the body of what appeared to be a Roman soldier equipped with circular shield and green tunic. Harry toppled and fell from his ladder before he backed quickly into the corner and fearfully watched as this soldier was followed by another on a horse, who was then followed by about 20 other soldiers marching on foot two by two, each and every one disappearing into the wall on the opposite side of the cellar. And something strange Harry would note about this account would be the level at which they marched, being visible from only the knees up, starting at the cellar floor. Harry would claim he could hear them speaking, along with the sound of the trumpet and their footsteps. He said these apparitions looked as solid and real as anyone. The attire he described them wearing was dismissed by academics after his story came out as not legitimate for Roman soldiers, as the regular wear would have been a red or off-white shade, but it would later be found during excavations to match the description of local reserve soldiers who took over the Roman garrison when the regular soldiers began returning home in the 5th century. Harry estimated these men to be in their 30s and 40s, also dismissed as far too old to have been soldiers recruited to the Roman army. But based on other discoveries, it's suspected this was the Forgotten Army, a peacekeeping and defensive force that consisted of older men who had lived in the area all of their lives. And the strangest of all of Harry's descriptions, the marching at a level below the cellar floor, only visible from the knees up, excavations would reveal that the treasurer's house had been built atop one of the major roads going through the area, the Via Decumana, and the level of the cellar floor was located above the level of the original road. Harry would not be the only one to claim seeing these soldiers going through the same motions. A female guest of the owner who had ventured to the cellar for more wine says she saw them. A housekeeper who went down to check on the boiler and reported also being terrified at the sight of Roman soldiers marching past her. And Harry didn't share his story for years following the experience in fear that he would be ridiculed, which he was up until the discoveries made over a decade later of the information that he 100% could not have known. It wasn't discovered yet. He could not have known. And it would be validated. It would validate everything that he claimed to see. Harry is quoted as saying, "I don't know about ghosts. You know, I had never seen a ghost before that day, and I have never seen one since. But I do know what I saw down there that day." He wasn't a believer or non-believer. Seems like a strange yarn to weave for someone who doesn't feel one way or the other about the paranormal and didn't even want to tell the story in the first place. I can imagine the impact such an experience would have on anyone, and I can understand the terror this kid felt, though the figures were never going to do anything to him because that's a residual haunting for you. Residual hauntings doing what residual hauntings do. It's no wonder some people come to this point of apathetic disinterest. I mean, what are they going to do? But also, you know, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? Thankfully, having a 3D hologram movie playing in your cellar or place of work or wherever is the most common type of haunting that there is, because things get a little bit trickier when we consider what other types of hauntings are out there. Now, to say one has an intelligent haunting is actually not saying a lot, or enough, rather. You're not going to know what that means right away, and it requires investigation. Intelligent hauntings branch out pretty quickly into three levels: benevolent, benign, and malevolent. Intelligent hauntings also branch out into various types of perpetrating entities. And if it's bothersome and terrifying to whoever is having to cope with it, it would require an investigation to suss out a prognosis. No matter what level or type of intelligence is at play, all can have commonalities. But even though you may be experiencing objects being tossed or lights being turned on, just something unseen affecting your physical environment, this doesn't immediately point to poltergeist or something evil. For example, a great personal account comes from a guy named Eric Wilson, whose story is documented in Brad Steiger's book, Real Ghosts, Restless Spirits, and Haunted Places. He begins by telling readers that his haunting started with some noises he was hearing consistently in his living room while he was up late working in the office. He assumed his cats were the culprits. However, the noises continued so consistently at around the same time every evening that he came to expect it. And when it happened while both of his cats were in the office, he got curious and staked out in his dark living room one night to wait for it. As he waited, he made sure he knew exactly where the cats were. Then, at the time the noises usually occurred, he suddenly heard, very distinctly, footsteps coming down the stairs. There was nobody there. The footsteps continued to the bottom, catching the attention of his cats, who ran over to the sounds expectantly, as if they were familiar and comfortable with whoever this was. They would follow the sound of the footsteps as they crossed the living room to the front door. Eric could hear the jiggling of the handle, as if someone were checking to make sure it was locked. What makes this not only unresidual activity, but also benevolently intelligent, can be seen in some of the activity that would follow. Mr. Wilson relays that doors would open and close, floorboards would creak, which is pretty regular kinds of activity and could be seen as creepy when taken out of context. He says he was awakened one night when every upstairs light where all of the bedrooms were located had been turned on, making him panic that he had an actual intruder. But there was no intruder, and he states that his child had been sick at the time, and this may have been the ghost's way of forcing him to go check on her. That activity, in conclusion, maybe, maybe not. But the activity that occurred that kind of drives home for me the benevolence of his ghost, I think had to do with his cats, who seemed to like whoever this was. They also preferred drinking running water, and the family would often turn on one of the bathroom faucets for them. Well, it became a not uncommon occurrence for the cold water to be turned on all by itself. The ghost was helping. How you treat animals says everything I need to know about you as a person. Or a ghost. Mr. Wilson finishes his story by claiming that there were many other paranormal occurrences that would take place in that house, but he and his family loved living there. What a cool haunting. Obviously not malevolent or troubling to the living. That may be too much activity for some folks, totally understandable. But you know, I don't think I would mind being haunted by a helpful ghost. Maybe one who enjoys editing audio. Just putting that out there. That would be super sweet.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Other examples of benevolent ghosts that I've read include potential abusers or bad actors and victims who weren't yet aware of the behavior until after the fact, being frightened off by purposeful ghostly activity. Reports of ghosts who haunt stretches of roadway who have reportedly helped folks who have crashed or been stranded. I told an interesting story that I found back in the season on Shadow People of a shadowy figure in a hat intervening in a father drunkenly attempting to hurt his daughter. She watched as it stepped in and Daddy went flying over a couch. Sounded like the Hat Man at the time, but there is consideration to be made for ghosts who can only manifest to the point of what appears to be a shade of someone, a shadow of them. Might not have been the Hat Man at all. Shadow figures versus ghosts is something that I will be considering this season. I just happened onto another great story of a benevolent haunting that was submitted to the website ghosttoghost.com involving actions taken to save this storyteller's life. The anonymous storyteller recounts that this happened in a pretty low part of his life, separated from his wife, living in a one-bedroom apartment on his own. After a week of being there, he found himself jolted out of sleep by a voice. At first, he thought it was either his own subconscious playing tricks as he fell into slumber, or he himself may have been sleep-talking, and that was what was waking him up. But the voice would tell him things like, "Don't forget the oven." He woke up, went to the kitchen, and sure enough, he had left the oven on. He said it was consistently happening, always with suggestions or reminders of things that had to be immediately done or could have been life-threatening. Well, one night, the same thing happened, except this time he heard the voice clear as day and wide awake say, "Get your pistol." He was awake. He was just sitting there. And when he asked, "What?" it followed with, "Sleep with it." After this voice, having spoken to him so many times before, having given him only good advice and warnings, and now knowing that it wasn't just in his own mind, he did go grab his gun and he slept with it under his pillow. He says, in the middle of the night, the voice woke him when it said, "He's here," and there was an intruder with a knife standing in his doorway. He handled the situation, having had the jump on the intruder, and everything ended well. He would end up moving out of the apartment later and never experiencing the voice again. I find this story especially fascinating because this man never knew who the benevolent spirit was, and the spirit, whoever it was, went out of its way to communicate with and ultimately save this guy's life. Very, very cool story. Now, in a benign, intelligent haunting, this could be unsettling just for the reason that you're going to be made aware of ghostly effects on your physical environment without being immediately certain if it's going to turn into something more serious or not. Most benign hauntings seem to revolve around ghosts just going about the regular activities from their previous lives. They don't really want anything to do with the living. They just want to continue their existence in a place. These could be a major bother to your peace, or you could accept that they are there and come to barely notice the impact on your space. Hopefully, that would be the case. I found a good example of a benign haunting in a story that Debbie Chestnut tells in her book, and that book is titled, "Is Your House haunted. She says that after her grandmother had passed away, her house had been sold to this couple. A few weeks after purchasing it, though, they reached out to report that they were finding objects that had been sitting on top of the fridge, tossed on the ground. They also said that they kept finding the living room blinds adjusted throughout the day. Debbie, who is a paranormal researcher and also a medium, went to meet the couple, and she knew that her grandmother was there, knew that she had loved the house, knew that she used to keep her meds on top of the fridge and detested taking them, and she knew that her grandmother often put the blinds up or down throughout the day just to block out sunlight. She was able to speak with her grandmother, assure her that her pills weren't something that she had to be frustrated with anymore, and that the couple was going to take good care of the place. And it seems like the grandmother was able to cross over or quiet down pretty quickly after that. So the ghostly actions were not directed at the couple, no malicious or benevolence about it. That is a benign haunting. Now, for the malevolent haunting. A majority of the hauntings that we have become familiar with are malevolent, though they are far less prevalent than we've been led to believe. They do make for the best movies, though. Ooh, so dramatic. A lot of malevolent hauntings can get chalked up to being demonic, which, based on my own dive into the demonic, are even far less prevalent. It can all be demons. For the time being, though, we are just focusing on the negative ghost of someone who used to be human. I imagine this occurrence might be pretty hard to distinguish from poltergeist phenomena, as they can cause a lot of the same activity, though they are considered two separate events. The one way I have discovered that you could use to tell the difference is that, as bad as poltergeist activity is, it's temporary. It does come to an end, eventually. Sometimes just as abruptly as it began. The crappy part about that, though, is poltergeist activity can potentially last for years. And ain't nobody got that kind of time when your family's antique china is being thrown at your head on the daily. We will talk about poltergeist activity in just a second. Malevolent, intelligent hauntings are concerning and need to be diagnosed and dealt with as soon as possible, unless you're a masochist. As many researchers like to say, if you were an asshole in life, you're going to be an asshole in death. And just imagine the kind of trouble you could cause knowing you can do so with total impunity. These hauntings are hostile and often seem intent on causing fear and can even cause physical harm. It is thought the people who make up malevolent ghosts were violent, resentful, angry, controlling, all around bad people, and they brought all that baggage with them into the afterlife. They didn't want to let it go. These hauntings can include disembodied voices, visual manifestations of apparitions, and malicious physical interactions such as throwing objects, scratching, and pushing. They may have personal motives related to the specific location that they haunt, unresolved issues from their life, or hate a targeted individual or group of individuals. If they were racist or sexist in their life, that may bleed over into the next. I've been to enough investigations where the ghost was thought to hate women and pinched, pushed, liked to pull hair. I didn't experience that personally, thank goodness, but still, it's a thing. A very dramatic and well-known example of a malevolent, intelligent haunting is that of the Bell Witch. The Bell family began to experience violent disturbances on their farm. The entity, thought to be the ghost of a local witch, was malicious and became highly interactive with the family, physically attacking them by ripping blankets off of them in bed, slapping their faces, pulling their hair. It also scratched surfaces, rapped on walls, moved objects, and after a period of time, seemed to grow in strength to the point of regularly speaking to them, which is a nice way of putting it with how threatening and manipulative it is said to have been. The Bell Witch seemed particularly focused on the family patriarch, John Bell, and eventually, it is thought, contributed to his death. This is a very old legend by now. It certainly had time to grow and expand, but if we take it at face value, it contains a lot of those elements included in a suspected malevolent, intelligent haunting. For a final example of malevolence, I wanted to tell you about some of the spirits at a location that I have had personal experience with, a place in which its haunted reality matches the legends told about it and the spirits who reside there. St. Ignatius Hospital. Never have I ever been to a place I have been suddenly so afraid of something I couldn't see and been faced with activity I could not deny was happening. Before I launch into it, I want to preface this by saying there are good spirits and energies at this location too, but boy, is there some dark stuff. And this is an ongoing haunting. St. Ignatius, built in the late 1800s, served as one of Inland Washington's first hospitals and ran for 70 years before closing down due to financial constraint. 4 years after this closure, a new owner took over and it was transformed into an assisted living facility for the developmentally disabled and served in this capacity until 2000. In 2015, in an effort to restore and potentially save what was recognized as an endangered historic location, the Chamber of Commerce began to offer public tours of the building. However, according to a write-up on hauntedrooms.com, they pretty quickly shut that down in the public's interest, citing safety issues after multiple guests were attacked on tours and guides were seen running out of the building in terror. I don't remember learning that before my investigation there. That is pretty spooky. I wonder what they saw. The property stood empty until a couple who were passionate about preserving historic buildings purchased it in 2021 and began offering tours, both historical and haunted, in order to help raise restoration funds. This access would really help bring St. Ignatius into the spotlight as a notoriously haunted location for paranormal investigators and researchers. All right, so what have investigators and researchers reported experiencing while there? Quite a variety, a menagerie of phenomena, actually, which does make me wonder if this might be considered along the lines of a portal haunting. I will bring that back up in just a minute. People have reported a green light moving around the building all on its own, disembodied sounds like conversations, crying, moaning, laughing. One tour guide reported hearing what sounded like a group of people coming up the stone steps. There really would be no denying what that would sound like, in my opinion. Well, he went to look. Not a single person was there. Doors open and slam by themselves. Footsteps can be heard all up and down the hallways and throughout the building, screaming, swearing, growling. And then there are witness accounts of apparitions. A terrifying image of a mangled, disfigured man believed to be the ghost of the first patient to ever die at the hospital. Some see shadow figures darting from one room to another. I had a shadow figure experience from my night there. A big, dark, blacker-than-black mass has been said to rush at people like a swarm of bees. Multiple people have seen this, including some on staff who were terrified enough to refuse to ever step foot in the building again. Folks have also been physically assaulted, getting scratched, hit, pushed. And then there is Michael and Rose, former patients who are documented in the hospital's files and time again have identified themselves to investigators and proven to be just as aggressive as they were when they were alive. These were not happy people. Both of these spirits, I also feel I made contact with. Let's start with Michael. Michael was said to have been a very attractive fella. This was in stark contrast to his personality, unnecessarily mean to the nursing staff. He was wheelchair bound following an accident, which may have contributed to his demeanor, or maybe he was always that way. He resided in room 312, a room quite anomalous to the others. It's oddly shaped, for one, like it's a renovated utility closet or something. It is also the only room in the entire building where it is said that flies will congregate. Michael is thought to be the strongest spirit at St. Ignatius and has been known to rush at visitors in an attempt to scare them out of his space. Not a nice dude. I had a fairly calm interaction with Michael. I had never used a REM pod before this night, had been carrying it around with us, trying it here and there with not much luck, set it on the windowsill in Michael's room, and that thing lit up like a Christmas tree in response to our questions. And then it petered out, and we took that as a nice way of saying, we should probably leave. And Rose. Darling Rosemary. Rose suffered from dementia when she resided at St. Ignatius. She was always in a bad mood then. And her angry voice and angry pounding on walls has been recorded numerous times since. She also shoves folks when it strikes her fancy. Folks will experience a lot of anomalous activity in her room. Cans get knocked over, flashlights turn on and off. She will speak using the spirit box, like that kind of stuff. But something a lot of folks don't talk about on the regular, like, write-ups about Rose is this scent that accompanies her. Perhaps this is not a well-known sign of her presence, but it was explained to me prior to our investigation launching that some people reported being able to smell rose perfume and a few other not-so-delicious scents. I did not think anything of it, personally, until I ran into an unmistakable thick blanket of what smelled like rose perfume and pee. It had not been there earlier in the night when I'd passed by her room. And at the point that this happened, I was walking around in complete darkness, had no idea where I was when it happened. As soon as I smelled it, I wanted to run for my life. Instant fear. Because I did not have an explanation of the sudden assault on my nose holes. Clicked on my flashlight to get my bearings, looked over, wouldn't you know it, Rose's room, directly to my left. Dudes, my soul yeeted itself out of my body and is somewhere in China by now. It just never stopped running. I still went into her room to investigate. Not much more than that happened during my visit with her. Just a crazy, crazy night. But those were my interactions with those two. According to the Chamber of Commerce director, the hospital probably has thousands of spirits, and most of them don't play well with others. It is said that most of the spirits here are intelligent rather than residual, and there is a good mixture between the sweet ones and the angry, mean ones. Thousands and thousands of people have died there, according to tour guide Valerie Gregory. So there you have it. Examples of intelligent, malevolent spirits and activity, what that might look like. Some people have claimed that there are demonic forces at play at this location. To each their own. I mean, maybe with whatever that black mass thing is, there could be a conversation had as to what the hell that thing is. I didn't see it. Thank goodness. I couldn't say. But I think if someone hasn't actually been there themselves, that's just not a call that you can make. And this is a good example of the fine line between what it looks like when a disgruntled, restless human ghost is active versus something else entirely. All right. I said I would talk about a portal haunting. I've only recently been introduced to this concept, but I think this might be a good one to add to our lexicons when considering haunting activity. I can think of like 10 hauntings off the top of my head that might better be considered a portal haunting. Thank you to hauntedoc.com for introducing me to this information. When you consider places like St. Ignatius, Skinwalker Ranch, the entirety of the Ocala National Forest, these are supernatural hotspots. They're places where there is so much activity, and it is hard to nail down into any given category. These might be portal hauntings. A portal haunting is based on the speculation that energetic doorways leading from one world or dimension to another world or dimension are available to the spirit world to travel between the two at numerous locations across the world. It's like a spirit highway, and all kinds of stuff can travel to and fro through it. This might be when someone is reporting consistent activity without any one specific entity or phenomenon to blame it on. There are no restrictions on where these portals can set up shop, and far too many to count theories as to what causes them to form. But if you have or know of an assuredly haunted location that is experiencing a wide variety of different anomalous activities, a portal haunting might be something to consider. When you are considering what type of haunting a certain case is, if it is your preference to, you might also consider elemental hauntings, and if everything else is ruled out, demonic hauntings. These are considered non-human hauntings that perform a lot of the same actions that a malevolent human haunting or poltergeist might. When I say elementals, I am talking about things like fairies, gnomes, elves, mermaids, these types of entities. What's super confusing is that at one time, these types of creatures, along with other and underworldly beings, would have all been considered something called a daimon, which would later be transformed to demon when the lens of the Judeo-Christian worldview was put upon it. Very briefly, elemental hauntings are said to be the rarest form and most often take place in isolated areas like out in the forest or in a desert. In theory, you wouldn't find this type of activity within a crowded town or city unless they were provoked and followed someone there. Demonic hauntings, in a way, are very similar in that they are thought to be pretty rare, and the entities who would be carrying them out must also be provoked or invoked in some way. All right, the final type of haunting. Again, I don't know if we can honestly classify this as a haunting because it is up for debate as to what causes them. The poltergeist. No matter the cause, They are reported to happen, and they closely resemble a malevolent, intelligent haunting. Early accounts of poltergeist manifestations date back to the first century. Since that time, cases have been reported across the world. Many poltergeist events have been proven to be pranks, though there are still quite a few that have been thoroughly investigated with no clear answer as to what caused the activity. Over time, this activity has had many theories put forth. According to some, poltergeists are low-level disembodied spirits closely related to elementals. Parapsychologists proposed the most popular theory today that the activity can be explained via psychokinesis of a targeted individual, most often an adolescent, most often female. Some very logic-based theories have been put forward as well. Guy William Lambert proposed in the 50s that underground water currents causing stress on a house was responsible for objects moving. Michael Persinger thought perhaps it was seismic activity that was to blame. And a physical chemist named David Turner proposed ball lightning because, you know, why not? That weird-looking stuff gets pulled into all kinds of things, doesn't it? Signs of a poltergeist can range in intensity and activity, depending on the situation. An actual poltergeist haunting may include unexplained noises that cannot be attributed to any physical source, unexplained electrical disturbances, objects moving of their own accord or suddenly appearing in a place, either sitting stationary or already in motion as if lobbed by something. There may be physical sensations like the feeling of being shoved, slapped, pinched, tripped. A quick note on the electrical disturbances. Some poltergeist cases have reported fires that have ignited with no easy explanation. Not all, but some have been the result of an electrical appliance or outlet malfunction. A final sign of poltergeist, this is an interesting one, look for unexplained pools of water or dripping water that doesn't seem to have a source. A thought that occurred to me when I took my first look at the poltergeist. I am not sure how investigators have arrived in the past at the activity being the result of psychokinetic energy alone and without the presence of an intelligent entity performing the activity. I will spend some time and a focused episode looking at this phenomenon thoroughly, but I would be interested to know where that line is drawn. Because it seems to me, while it could very well be simply that, a person of focus in a heightened emotional state, creating enough chaotic psychokinetic energy within themselves, enough to affect the environment around them, but might they also be creating a strong enough energetic output that an entity might see that as its time to shine and be very well be able to feed and manifest the activity with the aid of that energy, right? Does that make sense? Just a thought. The intensity and length of activity in a poltergeist haunting is as unpredictable and mercurial as the activity itself. A rather tame example of a poltergeist haunting can be found in a case from 1943 that took place in Oakland, California. A Mrs. Irene Fellows contacted the police claiming that someone was incessantly throwing stones at her home and herself and granddaughters whenever they tried to leave the house. The stones seemed to be emanating from nowhere. This activity had begun the morning of August 17th and quite suddenly. By the time the police arrived that evening, piles of rocks could be seen littered across the yard, indentations covered the outside of the home, and bruises could be seen on members of the family. The officers, who were skeptical at first, turned quite serious as they were taking Mrs. Fellow's statement when stones began raining down on her roof over them. An investigation was launched the following day. The family and neighbors were thoroughly interviewed and one by one exonerated of the activity. Many people were witness to the stones pelting the house and family whenever they tried to go anywhere. Scientists from the University of California who visited the house to investigate noted the following. The stones made zero noise in flight. They did not seem to be visible until they hit their mark. They came from all directions. They hit their marks with enough force to leave indentation on inanimate material or bruising on skin, and the stones seemed to be directed at the family upon exiting the home from a cloudless sky, striking one or more of them at a time. And then, midday on September 1st, after weeks of stones falling day and night, the activity suddenly stopped. Mrs. Fellows stood in her garden speaking with officers when a huge stone suddenly landed at their feet, and that was it. A far more intense and recent poltergeist haunting is claimed to have taken place from December 2005 to October of 2006 in South Shields, Tyne and Wear, England. While it began subtly enough, it quickly escalated into something far more violent and disturbing, terrorizing this young couple and their toddler. As is common with a lot of poltergeist cases, the initial activities were small and easily dismissed. Objects moved about the house. Chairs and small pieces of furniture were found slightly out of place. Some knocking and bumping, cold spots, stuff like that. It wouldn't take long before the events increased in intensity and became impossible to ignore. Large furniture was being moved, like a table and chair from the son's room being found moved outside of the room and sitting at the landing of the stairs. A small dresser was found on the son's bed. Smaller objects were witnessed projecting across rooms and outside when no window was open for it to have been launched through. The shower being turned on and left running. And it's said that the toddler's toys were being manipulated and rearranged in strange ways, like being lined up and all turned to face the family. Some of the stuffies were found with weird stuff on them, toy tools and plastic knives. And there's an instance of a razor blade found embedded in the arm of one of them. Over the course of a few months, the incidences became more frequent and intense. And then some pretty frightening messages were found scrawled on the toddler's toy slate. Messages like, die. Then, as I understand it, the activity took a violent, far more interactive turn. The couple frequently discovered scratches, bite marks, and bruises on their bodies that they had no explanation for. Levitating and thrown objects were witnessed more frequently. These objects ranged in size from writing pens and cups to chairs. And then at one point, the father reported the feeling of being strangled. He described feeling something wrapping around his neck. He was unable to breathe. And then the pressure just suddenly released. The family also began to receive threatening and hostile text messages. And these were all things that were reported to paranormal investigators Mike Hallowell and Darren Ritson, who would examine the case and end up witnessing and documenting some of the activity themselves. And they also noted the disturbing messages left for the family. And throughout this almost year-long haunting, other family members would also be witness to the strange, hostile activity. In late 2006, following months of escalation and right at the height of the activity as it reached a fevered pitch, which was what was noted by the investigators, the attack came to an abrupt stop. The South Shields poltergeist has been a well-documented and analyzed case. There would be plenty of material for skeptical fodder as well, but overall, there would be more than 20 firsthand percipients who provided written testimony of activity that they witnessed in this house. That it went to such hostile and violent places, and due to a seeming intelligence behind some of the activities, some do believe that this was more than just a typical poltergeist. I don't know about that. The fact that it just ended so abruptly with the family at the height of their fear, all that juicy, delicious terror to feed from, in theory, to just come to an end and never pick back up again? That is an aspect reported in all poltergeist cases. Apparently, there was supposed to be a documentary at some point with footage and photos and all that. That would be interesting to see. I would very, very much like to watch that. All right. We are going to wrap this one up before my voice entirely gives up on me. But we're going to wrap this one up on a cautionary and preventative note. Are there things you can do to avoid being haunted? And should you become haunted, how do you get yourself unhaunted? A majority of folks will never become haunted, to the best of their knowledge. That's the good news. But for the rest of us, there is still hope. If you are not a member of the population that doesn't mind being haunted and you would prefer to never have to go through the experience at all, here are some preventative measures to take into consideration. Do not buy a haunted house and do not go to haunted places. Research locations before visiting them. If they have a reputation for being haunted, if they are associated with tragedy, death, violence, or curses, consider whether whatever took place there would have been enough to collect or attract negative energies or spirits. And if the answer is yes, then just don't go there. FYI, in some states, the realtor or landlord, can't remember which, might be different for different states, but they have to disclose whether paranormal activity or tragic events and death has occurred on the property. So, yeah, don't hesitate to ask. If you have to go to these places, full well knowing they could be crawling with ghosts, there are plenty of ways you can shield yourself from an unwelcome hitchhiker. Say a prayer of protection. Wear protective symbols. Carry protective crystals. Cleanse your own energy. Only bring good, positive thoughts and energy in with you. You can talk to the ghosts and say, "Yo, don't even think about following me out of here. You are not welcome to come home with me." Also, it is recommended that you take caution with any spirit communication devices. If methods of communication can attract unwanted and uninvited negative entities to you, consider not using a Ouija board, spirit box, pendulum, etc. If you insist on communicating, you just don't want the ghosties taking that as an invitation, set your boundaries and intentions for only positive energies to interact or for negative energies to interact only so far. Put the kibosh on it right from the start. Keep your home clean, both spiritually and physically. Physically speaking, if you are surrounded by trash and dust and dirt, that seeps into your inner world and energies and can bring you down, lowering your spiritual defenses. Spiritually speaking, you can make it a regular routine to cleanse the energy of your home. Different people are going to have different opinions on what to use for this. I personally don't think it matters what you burn, so long as your intention is clear and strong. Keeping your space clean is, in theory, a detractant for negative, clingy energies. It is also thought if you keep your inner world clean, peaceful, positive, this would also reduce the likelihood of attracting spirits. How else can you avoid a haunting? Not inviting them in is a great precaution to take. Great start. Even if you are being playful about it or joking around, something unseen might take you seriously. You'll also want to avoid disrespecting any spirits. Avoid provocation, mocking them, being arrogant. You might just make them mad enough to stick with you. Along these lines, show respect to the potential spirits by not taking anything from or messing up their space. Leave it the way you found it. Same with grave sites. Probably not a good idea to disturb anything having to do with their final resting place. Leave it be. I have my own opinions on this next one, but take caution when you bring secondhand or antique items into your home. Just to be on the safe side, it is recommended that you cleanse whatever the object is to detach any potential lingering energies. And final precaution to take to avoid becoming haunted, and something I think is the most important of all. Trust your gut with all of this. If a place feels like it should be avoided, avoid it. If a person or an object is giving you the ick and you don't want to chance it, avoid them. And if you investigate the paranormal and you find yourself in these haunted places in the presence of paranormal media and influence and people who are involved in this world, trust your gut as you go through it. And this can go either way, too. I have been in plenty of haunted locations and walked away with zero problems. My gut told me I was safe to proceed in those cases. If you did not trust your gut or take any of these previously laid out precautions and are already haunted, what do you do? And for this, we will presume you have already ruled out a residual haunting, because we can't do anything about those anyway, right? Now is the time to stay calm and rational. You need to assess the nature of what is happening and whether you even have a ghost on your hands. Figure out a way to begin to track the activity, whether in your notes app or a journal, just writing it out. This will also help you later when looking for patterns and also give you something to hand to investigators if the situation ever comes to that. After a bit, you will have a collection of activity that you can then look to and decide whether this is excessive activity beyond what you might consider happenstance. Then you will go through and remove anything that can be ruled out by natural causes. Test the hinges on the door that slams every night. Change the bulb or call in an electrician for the flickering light in the basement. Do you have an electrical issue? A draft? Have you been mentally stressed as of late? It is a crucial first step to face your potential haunting skeptically at the start. Only once you have done this can you decide if, one, you even have a haunting on your hands, and two, what the nature of the haunting is. Based on that, you will know who to reach out to for help if you desire to do so. If you want to wait and see if you and your family can do something yourselves before calling in the professionals, here are some things to try. I will play it safe and state that this is for entertainment purposes only and brought to you by very public sources that anyone can find on Google. Many of these can be found in the preventative section that we just covered as well. Cleanse and clean your home. Spiritually cleanse yourself. recite protective prayers or mantras, use visualization. Imagine yourself surrounded by a bright protective light. Imagine your family, your home, surrounded by a bright protective light. If you have brought any objects into your home that you think might have something to do with the haunting, remove them. Think about cleansing them first so you're not just passing the buck onto someone else. Be a good person. You can also do a few things to raise the vibrations inside of your home. Something as simple as rearranging furniture, condensing, tossing, donating items can drastically change the energy in your house. Playing uplifting music to raise the energy. Some people believe that ringing bells or chimes can break up stagnant or oppressive energy. So go hog wild. Hang them in every room. Through all of this, keep a check on your own emotional triggers like stress, traumas, conflicts. These kinds of emotional states can exacerbate activity. And if you haven't yet tried this, the simplest approach might be to just talk to the entity. Take the opportunity to set your boundaries and tell it to leave. Might not work, but if you don't ask, the answer is already no. If after doing all of this, you do not notice a difference, or worst case scenario, the activity seems to have picked up, time to call for help and kick yourself for just not calling them in the beginning. A haunting, depending on the severity, can be quite distressing, very scary, and feel so much bigger than us. It's okay to call in reinforcements. Just please, please, please vet your options. If you want an investigation team to come in, look for reviews, ask for references, ask to speak with them over the phone first. Trust your gut. You might also consider looking for teams that utilize a medium or an energy worker, someone who can help you cleanse the energy and remove the negative source. Many teams already work with these types of people or know of them and can make a recommendation for you. If you follow a particular faith, you can also reach out to a leader in your religious community. Have them come by to bless the space. That may very well be enough. Thank you all so much for tuning in. Thank you for putting up with my crazy voice today. Please join me for a final note. No two hauntings are alike, even though they may share a lot of the same characteristics. That is clear after today's dive. Hauntings, from benevolent to malevolent, are often viewed through a lens of fear. It is a part of our nature to fear the things we do not fully understand, the things we cannot see, the dark shadows without identifying features, the strange noise we can't quite place a finger on, the unsettling unknown stirring within familiar spaces. But I wonder if we could look past that initial fear, view it from a place of peace and compassion. If there isn't a profound message to receive here. A haunting is usually created when a story of a person has been told. And if we are present and willing to listen, the story is still being told. Hauntings remind us that time is not a boundary, but a flow. That memories and moments are never truly lost. And that existence, in the way that we understand it, existence transcends death. A benevolent haunting can remind us that those we care about are still around. Something benevolent can offer comfort, make us feel watched over, remind us that we are never truly alone, even when we feel like we couldn't be more alone. And even a malevolent haunting can give us a powerful perspective about life. It is easy to label these as evil and assume they only wish us harm. Yet, many spiritual and historical beliefs about ghosts has said time and time again that such spirits may themselves be in need of something. They may be lost, bound by anger, confusion, or unresolved pain, and they cannot find their peace without help. Imagine how long they may have been trying and been ignored or run from. I might be incredibly frustrated too. If you are experiencing a haunting, only you can know what the right thing is to do depending on what it is that you are dealing with. But if you take a second to go through the information from today's show or another favorite source, you will know that in all likelihood, it's residual and absolutely nothing to worry about. In least likelihood, it's demonic or something else that was never alive. But if it's neither, if you find that it's somewhere in between the two extremes, what are you left with? It's a person, just like you and me. And that is proof that reality is not what it seems, that there is life beyond death, and that there is a much larger story being told here that extends beyond our current understanding of it. No personal call to action today, folks. Please keep the good people of North Carolina and all areas affected by the hurricane in your thoughts. It's been a little over a week since it hit. I know recouping and recovery efforts have been underway, but I know a lot of people were lost. I know a lot of people suffered, and I'm just heartbroken to know that and not be able to do anything. I'm also heartbroken to have people that I know and love who were there, are still there, trying to manage. But I've gotten to speak with one of them recently, and that has filled me with so much hope. There's a lot of beautiful things happening down there. People leaning on each other, camaraderie, and that's just really very hopeful. Recovery efforts, recouping efforts are underway in the aftermath of Helene. During this time, if you are interested in showing support, doing what you can to help, the American Red Cross and World Central Kitchen, I know, are incredible, trusted options. There are some local groups of volunteers doing their best to help as well. From out here looking in, I just wanted to thank them for the work that they do, and thank them for helping my friends. And thank you all so much for listening again. And hey, I am gonna be putting my thoughts from today's final note to the test. I will be facing my own fears of the unseen soon enough when I return to St. Ignatius for round two. I would like to try my luck again with Rose and Michael. See if a little patience and compassion on my end might open up the lines of communication a little bit more. They may be angry spirits, but not unreachable spirits, I think. I hope. Hopefully, I don't see that bee thing, though, dudes. That is some wackadoodle, scary, non-human stuff. I'm not quite sure just yet where to begin with that. It's like a Rorschach test with surround sound. Crazy. That is all for you for now, you guys. Until next time, stay safe, keep the nightlight on, and sleep with one eye open.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.